JEA names an interim CEO, but not without controversy. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, a former utility board member and appointee of the mayor becomes interim CEO of JEA. Critics cry foul, though, as one of its top executives with much more experience is passed over. Get on the line now with your thoughts at 549-2937. Then later, it's Distracted Driving Awareness Month. We'll tell you about a campaign to make sure you're keeping your attention on the roads out there. Plus, we've also got to look ahead to next week's She Is Fierce spring event as we talk with the featured speaker, WJXT anchor Melanie Lawson. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, yesterday, the JEA Board of Directors named fellow board member Aaron Zahn as the utility's interim CEO. This after rejecting the naming of an inside candidate with far more experience, JEA CFO Melissa Dykes. Now, Zahn appeared actually on this program back in the summer of 2014 when he was CEO of a company called BCR Environmental. He talked to us on that morning about wastewater issues. Take a listen.
Maybe it's best for people to understand how wastewater works. Basically, a wastewater plant is a large filter. What comes into it is nutrients, organic waste, viruses and bacteria, and what gets filtered out is the water that gets cleaned and discharged for to the surface or into the ocean. And what's left is really a solid fraction of all that organic waste. What BCR does is we're the first company in the world to get a new method approved to disinfect, stabilize, and deodorize that material so they can be reused for beneficial purposes as opposed to being put into a landfill with municipal garbage.
All right, that's Aaron Zahn, the new interim CEO of JEA. He was talking to us back in 2014 about his former company, BCR Environmental. Now, Zahn was appointed by Mayor Lenny Curry to the JEA board only in January of this year, and he was approved by City Council in late February. Less than 2 months later, he stepped down from the board to apply for the utility's interim CEO job. Zahn beat out JEA CFO Melissa Dykes for the company's top spot, even though she has far more experience suited to the role with decades in the utility industry. Dykes also oversees hundreds of employees at JEA right now. Though Zahn doesn't have any experience running a large utility company, he says his plan is to modernize JEA and create a detailed strategic plan for the future. He also says he wants to put a pause on controversial discussions to possibly sell JEA off to a private company. Zahn's appointment coming on the heels of another controversial appointment to lead Jacksonville's new Kids Hope Alliance agency is sparking renewed discussion about City Hall's potential hand in these announcements. You'll recall that right after Lenny Curry was first elected mayor, he purged major boards and commissions across town and appointed his own picks for many key posts. This even though staggered board appointments are specifically intended to serve as a counterweight to giving City Hall too much consolidated power over what happens in this city. A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics has been following this story, and he's on the line now with his thoughts. A.G., always good to have you on the show. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts and comments about the announcement that JEA has a new interim CEO? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax, and we always welcome your comments as well on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Okay, so we have an outsider, a change agent, leading JEA, at least in an interim capacity, A.G. Gankarski. Critics say that Mr. Zahn does not have the requisite experience to lead this $1.2 billion utility with thousands of employees and many moving parts. He beat out the CFO, Melissa Dykes, although she has decades in the industry, working her way up through the company. At first blush, critics are saying this looks like another move to have someone who is friendly to the mayor's agenda installed in a key position. Your thoughts on that criticism?
Well, I mean, if you look at the timeline that you that you pointed out. You got on the board, got off the board, applied for CEO, and became CEO, basically, without any real board discussion. It was an interesting meeting because Dykes made her pitch, Zahn made his pitch. There was no real discussion at the point, so there were votes. There was a vote on Dykes first. Dykes didn't have the four votes needed. Then there's a vote on Zahn, with Dykes getting an undetermined position. Zahn got the votes he needed. And nobody really knows why it went down that way. I mean, board chair Alan Howard, he talked to media, but there wasn't a real sense of the process there. So there are a lot of questions as far as Zahn appointment. Mayor Curry's talking to media today at 9:45. So those questions will undoubtedly be asked of him and Zahn, if Zahn does the press availability. But, you know, a lot of people are saying it's just like Kids Hope Alliance, Joe Peppers, you know, who was on the board and then, you know, became CEO. And, you know, we're seeing history repeating. And this raises questions for a lot of people.
And what questions does it raise for you as a close observer of the political scene and city governance? In terms of the history of this, there was this purge of boards and commissions across the city when Mayor Curry first got elected. Was that done strategically so that we could now see this type of situation playing out as Mayor Curry gets geared up for re-election?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you saw with the purge that you discussed, especially regarding planning commission, you know, JEA board itself was purged also. A lot of people moved off the JEA board in favor of Curry donors and people who are friendly to him. And, you know, the question was, at the time the case was, well, the new people are aligned with Mayor Curry's agenda. That was something the city council basically took at face value. People got dumped from boards, people got reappointed to boards, and there were very few no votes on anything, with the exception of planning commission positions. So to me, it raises the question of why didn't council do more due diligence? Because I sat in the rules committee for a lot of those hearings, and it's basically like, we know you, we like you, we're fine being on the board. I mean, that's basically how it went. It didn't matter who was the chair of rules. So, you know, Mayor Curry could not have done this on his own. This is something where, you know, his team lobbied council effectively. They got the moves to happen, and now there is at a point where there really is no meaningful pushback. You know, critical articles, you know, critical politicians in the press, you know, these are one thing, but there's no pushback in the sense that, you know, these people can't be removed from the boards. I mean, John Cressenbay is saying, well, you know, we need to take a harder look at the JEA board. Well, it's too late because they've been duly appointed. There is that simulacrum of independence, and you know, people can't be removed by council fiat. That's something that happens at the pleasure of the mayor's office, and you know, obviously he put his people in for a reason, so buckle up. It's going to be a wild ride.
Wow. Okay. And going beyond the inside baseball political discussion about this, let's talk about what this means for the utility and for the city. The new interim CEO, Aaron Zahn, is saying he would like to stop discussions about privatizing this utility because he said that the discussion about it had turned toxic. And so what about that and what that means for the future of JEA?
All right. It's not a stop. It's more of a halt or a pause, depending on which quote you want to use. To me, a pause or a halt, it's indeterminate length. You know, it could be as long as a couple of months. I mean, if Aaron Bowman is president of city council and he's got a different alignment on this stuff than Anna Brochet does, and all indications are that's the case, that discussion could reemerge. That discussion could emerge as soon as elections happen, you know, next spring. You know, this isn't a hard stop on the discussion. It's going to happen on the council level regardless because John Cressenbay is going to keep his committee going. His committee meets again tomorrow morning. You know, so there will be a discussion of the merits of privatization. But, you know, for now, there will be some sort of pause, at least in JEA's involvement, because Zahn, this is something that Matt Schellenberg, a councilman who's the JEA liaison, told me, Zahn's just not going to be in a position to answer real questions about JEA operations. If Melissa Dykes had gotten the CEO position, she would have been able to answer operational questions. She would have been able to answer questions about meetings with, you know, Curry senior staff, like Chief of Staff Brian Hughes. There would have been a lot there, but that was on. it's almost like a tabula rasa. So you've got this, you know, multi-month process that was initiated by former board member Tom Petway, a Lenny Curray donor, who said, well, we should privatize this thing or at least look at it. And, you know, then we've seen what's happened since then. And now JEA, which basically initiated the process, is saying, well, we want to put the brakes on. So it raises a lot of questions. I don't think the pause is going to be longer than a few months because the conditions that created the discussion are still there. The fact that profit margins are going down, the fact that there are questions about the future viability of utility. There are questions about how to restructure utility. There could be ways to privatize certain aspects of the utility. So, you know, the things that led to the discussion are still in place. So, you know, I think there's waiting for it to cool off a little bit before getting back into it. And I think Zahn would be comfortable with that discussion at that point. I don't think any of this is an accident with him and Lenny Curry.
All right, let's go to your calls now as JEA names an interim CEO, someone who just joined the JEA board this year, then stepped down after less than 2 months to apply for the top spot and got it. At least for the time being, he is the CEO of the company. The utility will employ a search firm, presumably, to hire a permanent CEO. What are your thoughts, comments, questions? 549-2937. Rick is in Springfield. Hi, Rick. Good morning.
Good morning. I want to agree with the last speaker and others that this guy should be probably seen as a stealth candidate for later privatization. He'll be able to prepare for that eventuality from the inside and make it look like he's actually shunning controversy. I also wanted to say that, you know, to me, Lenny Curry is following a game plan that you can see in the Republican arena from the top down to the very bottom. He gets into office, he immediately forms a pact to attract dark money, centralizes decision making in the office of the executive, and, you know, fills the agencies with people who will do his bidding, you know, so that that centralized authority isn't threatened. I see it in every Republican controlled jurisdiction, you know, throughout the country. It's a plan, and it's not even very opaque. They speak about it openly. So, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Rick. And, you know, I think, to be fair, I've seen Democratic politicians execute the same kind of playbook. I could talk about the Democratic machine in Cook County, Illinois, where I lived in the 90s. But that said, A.G. Gankarski, what about Rick's comments?
Yeah, there's some truth to the comments. I mean, you know, the Republican Party, especially in the last 10 years, has gone in a different direction. And Republican politicians, you know, such as Lenny Curry, they want to control their messaging. They want to control their deployment because, I mean, if you take a look at the local party here, for example, it's pretty dysfunctional. So for Curry and his, you know, two or three dozen top donors, you know, to fund and form a PAC, I mean, it just makes sense in terms of, you know, pushing policy objectives.
And that had not been done before by a mayor of Jacksonville, had it?
No, it didn't really have to. You know, it was pretty much a good old boy system up until Alvin Brown, and Alvin Brown was a deviation. And I think Lenny Curry basically did what, you know, Peyton, Delaney, the predecessors to them, you know, didn't do, and basically consolidated the political operation. And, you know, the closeness of the political operation to the mayor's office, I mean, the Venn diagram overlaps. I mean, we saw Brian Hughes move over from, you know, the political side to chief of staff side, and the joke was, well, he was chief of staff all along, wasn't he? And that's sort of the reality. I mean, it's a very political mayor's office. They're very unapologetic about it. You know, and they see themselves as being transparent. Like, well, you can see where the money comes from. And yeah, I mean, the people who look at the campaign finance databases can see where the money comes from. Others, not so much. So it's the way the game is going to be played from here on out, I think, in the city.
Casey is in Mandarin. Go ahead, Casey.
Hey, Hey, Melissa. So it wouldn't be NPR if you didn't have at least one feminist calling in. So I'll be that caller today.
Okay.
I just am curious about sort of the breakdown of JEA as far as ratio of women to men. I don't think that we can ignore that as a factor, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for that. You know, AG, a number of women on social media have been posting about this, noting that a woman inside JEA with decades of experience, Melissa Dykes, CFO of the company, was passed over in favor of a man, a white man, who has experience, but not the type of experience one might think would be necessary for a job this high profile and this difficult. And from the feminist point of view, it seems as if a very competent woman was passed over for a less qualified man.
Yeah, that is the read of a lot of people. Chesa Duvall from the Times Union made that point, very precisely. And you know, if you're in there watching what went on, Dykes to me made the better pitch. I mean, Dykes made a pitch that was rooted in institutional knowledge of JEA. The board members, like I said, they didn't discuss it. They just made their votes, which raises transparency questions. It, raises sunshine questions that, I expect people will look into.
How do you look into something like that? Because we've already established that the majority of the board members are there presumably to help execute Mayor Curry's agenda. How do you look into this vote? There's no documentation of, talks in the shade about it or anything like that I'm aware of.
I mean, I'm sure people do the due diligence, the public records request, and so on. I mean, I think that's about as far as you can go unless you, get some tips they can follow up on. And, I'm sure there will be, a lot of gossip about the process. But, it really was about optics because, seeing Melissa Dykes not get the votes and having to sit there and watch that go down, it was heartbreaking in the sense that a board meeting can be heartbreaking. I don't expect Melissa Dykes to stick around too much longer. She is a cornerstone of the current operation. She is going to be in demand, and she will get a leadership position somewhere else. And it will be Jacksonville's loss because, ultimately, it wasn't just losing the position. There was an element of losing face. There was an element of it looking like the deck was stacked against her. Whether it's a fair assessment or not, I don't know, but it's how it looked in the room.
Lots of calls on this as we talk with A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics about the interim CEO appointment at JEA. Mayor Curry is giving a news conference about this in a few minutes. Peter on the north side. Go ahead, Peter.
Hello. I worked for St. John's River Power Park, the power park on the north side that was just shut down. And I can tell you that Melissa Dykes did not lose out the position that she wanted. She didn't want that position. They just don't want her to be in a position where she can say anything about the inner workings of JEA. So she already knew what was going on, and it was a show.
So what is really going on? What's really going on?
Well, exactly what you said, the political power plays, the strategy of hiding in plain sight and being unashamed of doing things that don't appear to be very on board or upboard. Concerning the power plant on the north side, that's 1,300 megawatts. The day after they shut down that plant, they bought 800 megawatts. It's not cheaper to buy on the market. And as you saw with the power outages that we had in January when the weather went bad, they couldn't buy power anymore on the market. So they had to cut customers off. Now, the former chairman of the board, Mike Hightower, a political lobbyist, he then became director of public relations for JEA, working for
public
Melissa
Affairs.
Dykes.
Yeah, and, public affairs. Yeah.
Okay. Which in itself seems to be a conflict of interest there. And his job has been to spin these things very effectively in a favor that that serves Mayor Lane Curry, Tom Petway, and Shad Khan's and Jim Daly's agenda.
All right, Peter, thanks for chiming in. Former employee on the line. Let's go now to, it's Andy Johnson on the line, former talk show host Andy Johnson. Andy, good morning.
Good morning. Interesting discussion. I may have missed a couple of points, so maybe I'm going to be redundant. 50 years ago, we had some big problems in this city, and we thought we cured them by setting up a new plan for all these independent authorities and all these independent agencies that have staggered terms. And I think it's very important that in spirit and in reality, we continue this staggered terms arrangement on the JEA and on every board. Staggered terms is our guard against corruption. To hire Mike Hightower, for Mike Hightower to be the chairman and then hire himself to work for the JEA is obviously just a plain, open, wide open, the definition of corruption. That's wrong. And what happened yesterday is wrong for a lot of reasons. We have one person who is trained and professional, the other person, a political hack, who is talented at doing things like selling agencies, but not like running agencies. Everybody gave a speech. All members of the board gave a speech saying that they were against selling the JEA, but then they hired the man who has no qualifications unless it is for the purpose of selling
well,
the JEA.
Well, let me jump in and say, what about the previous caller who noted that people inside the utility didn't feel that Melissa Dykes necessarily even wanted the job.
I don't know, Melissa. I don't know. She appeared to want the job at the meeting yesterday. And whether she wanted it or not, we needed her to take the job. We needed Melissa. And that leads me to the other point. There are a few of us here in Jacksonville who are still unembarrassed to be called feminists. I'm a feminist. I think everybody ought to be a feminist. We ought to support having women treated equally with men. They hear one more time, we hire a woman. Yesterday they hired her to run the agency that hired Zahn to be her boss. They hired the woman to do the work, hired the man to get the glory, get the higher pay, and to be the big shot.
Okay. Thanks for those comments. A.G. Gankarski.
Yeah, we got to bounce off in a second because the governor's about to show up. But I think what the points that the JEA employee made, you know, that's the kind of talk you're going to be hearing. Did Melissa Dykes really want the job? You know, and to me, she made the effort. I mean, she presented herself as a candidate. She went around, talked to the board members. She did the things that an active, viable candidate would have done. She could have read the tea leaves and said, well, you know what, I'm not going to pursue this. I don't think Melissa Dykes, one of the smartest people in the city, would set herself up to be a sacrificial lamb because, you know, that wouldn't be in her interest. And she didn't look like somebody who was being part of a show. She looked like somebody who had lost the rigged fight. That's a significant point. And, you know, like I said a few minutes ago, I'm very curious to see where Melissa Dykes goes next because I don't see her as part of this power-sharing arrangement with Aaron Zahn for very long. I think Aaron Zahn's going to make some changes operationally. I think he's going to shake some cages. I think the board is going to have to take more of an activist role also, which is going to be challenging because that board is uneven. There's some very talented people on that board, and there are some people on that board who don't pull their weight. So it's going to be an interesting time for JEA as they approach another hurricane season and you know everything goes along with it.
That's right. And that will be hopefully that the utility will respond as admirably as they did last year. It's certainly an important story for this whole city. A.G. Gankarski, writer for Florida Politics, we always appreciate your insights. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Much more still ahead, meanwhile. Later, She Is Fierce Live, a big spring event coming up next week. We'll talk with the featured fierce speaker, WJXT anchor Melanie Lawson. But up next, keeping you safe out there on the roads. We'll tell you about Distracted Driving Awareness Month right after this.
And good morning. I'm Kevin Mersch, our producer for First Coast Connect. Here in our spring fund drive, we are up to $16,000. Make that call now. Thank you very much. 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, or go online at wjct.org. You know, your financial support really makes WJCT a much stronger station. We get funding from some various places, but the big one is you. That's the one that we can count on the most. I mean, governments and foundations and stuff, they can come and go. But we know that you're out there listening and that you support this station. So we know that you're going to be out there to show your support. If you enjoyed this program, we've done a lot of talk about JEA and the possible privatization on this program and looked at it from every angle possible, because we know it's important to you. Because every time we get lots of phone calls, lots of comment about what it's going on at JEA, we know it's important that you hear all of this and that we make sure that you know what's going on. Well, we only can do this with the support of listeners like you. So how about joining us? Become a sustainer at $10 a month. It's great. It's easy. You just call up, give us your card number or even a bank draft number, and we will bring you all of that great programming, and you're always doing your part. That $10 a month is very, very, very simple to do. And remember, we have our First Coast Fun Package. Everyone who calls in with a donation during this drive is going to be placed there. Your name's going to go into the hat, and we're going to pull out and have a great stuff from some local businesses, from River City Brewing to Mossfire Grill, The Bookmark, Comedy Zone, Alhambra, Sweet Pete's, Adventure Landing. It's a package worth over $1,200, and one person's going to be lucky enough to win that big package, so you're going to have plenty of things to do around the First Coast if you win this. But you need to make that call right now, show your support, and thank you very much. Once again, the number is 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528. Go online at wjct.org, and thank you much for showing support for this, your public radio station.
Community Hospice and Palliative Care. Since 1979, the compassionate guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours. Available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com.
I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. From the State House to the Everglades to the Panhandle, Florida has a unique story.
So join us every Friday for the Florida Roundup.
And hear from newsmakers, journalists, and Floridians from all across the state
about the issues that matter to you.
The Florida Roundup, Fridays at 1 on WJCT.
Hi, I'm Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues is now on twice a week. Blues Horizon, Monday and Wednesday nights at 11. Right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, it is a major threat to public health, one that has actually killed more people than polio ever did in its worst year. Distracted driving. According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, more than 37,000 people died on U.S. roads last year, and nearly 3,500 of those deaths were caused by distracted driving. April is Distracted Driving Awareness Month. Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Firm is here now with more about his company's campaign to stop distracted driving. Hey, Wayne.
Glad to be here.
Now, you've been doing your distracted driving awareness presentation all over town for years now. You've talked to thousands of students and drivers, giving some really good common sense advice, but we can never repeat this advice often enough, can we?
I think we have to do it. It is an epidemic, as you point out, but I'm afraid that the adult population, driving population, probably assumes that the problem is with teenagers only. Uh-huh. It's not.
It's not.
There are many more of us than there are of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to realize that we shouldn't just block this out or assume that it doesn't apply to me. It does. It applies to us, and we have to realize that we're not able to effectively drive the vehicle at the same time that our mind is engaged with somebody else, someplace else. And that's and, really what it's all about.
And most commonly engage in looking at a smartphone.
Well,
right?
It is, except I think that most of us are smart enough to realize that if we're looking at the phone, we've taken our eyes off the road. And so more and more people are going to Bluetooth or hands-free. What they don't realize is that's equally dangerous.
You shouldn't do that at all.
If your brain is engaged in a conversation with somebody that's 20 miles away, when there's a danger that's 100 feet away in front of you, that's a problem. It is what happens. All the brain science says that you become brain blind. You're unaware of what is going on in front of you. So even though people think they're doing the safe thing by being hands-free and using it, they're not.
They're really not. And there are all sorts of new infotainment systems in new vehicles as well that are also contributing to distracted driving.
They do. They invite people to engage with the dashboard that's right there in front of them. And even, as I say, if it's hands-free and they are audibly, they speak and it texts out, when your mind is involved in that, all the science shows that you are not paying attention to what you must be doing. You only have one job when you're driving a car, and that's to get from point A to point B safely. I would bet, and I've done this in multiple groups when I ask, is there anybody that can say they've had the experience, that or they haven't had the experience of being in their car, on the phone, and then wondering, did I miss my exit? Did I miss the turnoff? Mm-hmm. Did I miss the intersection of the very place that I was going to?
I think so many of us have had that experience.
Universal.
Yes,
so it proves the point that the mind is really engaged someplace else and not on the task of driving. And that is extremely dangerous because you're going at 60 miles an hour, you're going 88 feet a second.
That's right.
That's
now,
why they call it a mile a minute.
That's right. Now, there was legislation in Tallahassee once again this year to make texting while driving a primary rather than a secondary offense. It didn't pass.
It didn't pass. And there were concerns that were expressed there that had to do with the potential of profiling. But people should realize that even now, if an officer was not well-trained or had a bad animus or something like that, they can stop a person for careless driving right now. And so if you're up too close or you're weaving, which are all symptoms of being distracted, people can be stopped. So I think they should have passed it because it would help to elevate the understanding of people. One of the things that's missing out there is an understanding among those who run business organizations that they are liable for damages if somebody is in the course and scope of their employment, even if it's their own car and their own phone. If they are working for that company, the company puts its brand at issue. It is an OSHA violation. There are prosecutions that are going on across the country for being distracted and causing an accident. Manslaughter prosecutions.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to have policies in place that tell their employees you cannot use your phone at all during when that car is out there on the road. Pull over or just turn it off and wait until you get to where you are. What happens is people prepare themselves with their work instead of just being lazy and being in the car and doing it, calling in. Yeah. I listen to your show all the time, but of course, people are out there on the highway and they call in.
Sure.
Well, at that moment, if that's important enough for them to call and express to you or your guest their concerns, that means that their mind is on that topic
and
not
on
driving
the
car.
Right.
And that's just a kind of a close and personal example.
Now, one last point. Self-driving cars are becoming more common. They have been touted as a solution to this problem, but there was recently a crash of an Uber self-driving car that killed a pedestrian in Arizona. So how do you see that aspect of driving affecting this discussion?
It's a long way off. That's experimental, right? We're going to be a long way before the technology is capable of doing that. And then you have to be in a situation where there are more and more cars that are of that type. Self-driving cars. Well, just think of all the cars that are out there on the road, and they're going to be out there for the next decade or more, and they're not going to be that kind of car. Some of the collision of avoidance technology that's out there is helpful. But what I find, and I have that in the car that I drive, I actually pay a lot of attention to that because I'm never fully comfortable that it's going to act when it needs to act and slow the car down because a car in front of me is slowing down. Mm-hmm. Driving a car requires attention. And anything like these cell phones and the use of them that takes your attention away from that puts you at risk, people that you care about at risk, and the families of other people who are out there on the road that don't have the opportunity to protect themselves from somebody who's distracted. It's dangerous. It's an epidemic. People can simply decide, I'm not going to do this. I mentioned to David Luckin before coming on air, the Eagles probably said it the best in Hotel California. We're all just prisoners here of our own
device. Of our own device. That's right. But oh,
maybe
God,
that's
it's
why
so
they,
true.
Maybe that's why they call it a cell phone. We need to avoid it.
Oh, you kill me, Wayne. Okay. If you want to have Wayne come and do a distracted driving presentation, he does this all year round for both kids and adults. He'll come to your business. He'll come to your school. He'll come to your civic group. You just go to WayneHogan.law, or call his firm, Terrell Hogan. And this is a free presentation.
Yes, it is. We're happy to do that as often as possible because we want to get the word out that this is dangerous. It kills. One text or call, as we say, can wreck it all.
That's right. Well, Wayne, it's always great to see you. Thanks for the timely advice. April is Distracted Driving Awareness Month. Thanks for being here.
Thanks very much, Melissa.
He's attorney Wayne Hogan. And later in the hour, Channel 4's own Melanie Lawson joins the show. A preview of her fierce talk next week in 5 Points. But up next, it's a new cultural institution in the city, Yellow House. That's after this.
If a hurricane threatens our state, Florida's public radio stations have joined forces to ensure you receive important storm information. No matter where you are, you can stay informed on the radio, online, on social media, and on the mobile app Florida Storms. Timely weather information is always available from WJCT. The Florida Public Radio Emergency Network is supported by Citizens Property Insurance. Online at citizensfla.com.
Join WJCT for Be My Neighbor Day, Saturday, May 5th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the WJCT studios. The day will include family-friendly activities, PBS Kids characters, food trucks, and so much more. The event is free, but reservations are required. For more information, log on to wjct.org/events.
I'm Stephen Dubner on the next Freakonomics Radio. Roughly 70% of Americans are financially illiterate.
How do I save for retirement? How do I deal with all these questions about budgeting and when to buy a house and all this kind of stuff?
Everything you always wanted to know about money, but were afraid to ask, that's next time on Freakonomics Radio.
Sunday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, after her exit from the Cumber Museum of Art and Gardens, Hope McMath turned her talents from leading a very traditional cultural institution to starting something a little edgier. It's Yellow House, McMath's new project. And it's a center not just for art exhibits, but also a convener for those working on social change. One example is Yellow House's current exhibit, Voices Unearthed. Hope McMath of Yellow House Art is here to tell us more. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to see you. So what is Voices Unearthed?
So Voices Unearthed is an arts and activism project that is student-centered and student-led. So it's a partnership with Elon, which is a literary arts magazine based out of Douglas Anderson School of the Arts. So the exhibit is visual art and poetry, all with big and powerful messages. And not only is the art on display by students, but the show was actually co-curated by students. So it's really also about empowering youth to lead.
Nice. And this runs through May, so people have some opportunities to come see it.
Yeah, it's up through May 19th, and we actually have a couple nights of poetry readings and music and art. May 15th, we have a night of spoken word. And on May 12th, we actually have a family day that is all being created and led by the students in the exhibition.
Yellow House is a place not just for people to come and look at art, but to also really be part of a community. That was your vision for this, wasn't it?
Yes, it's true. It's a space that hopefully gets a lot of us out of our bubbles. And so far it's working. It's pulling together communities that otherwise haven't necessarily been included in the sort of center of culture within our city. We have artists from the refugee community participating with us, working alongside artist activists, working alongside students, working alongside people doing community building and social justice work. And so it's really where those people are intersecting that I think there's really special magic happening.
And that's exciting for you. You're applying your talents as a curator and head of a museum to a whole new thing. Yellow House is located in the Cork Arts District, and it literally is a yellow house.
It is
a bright yellow house.
It is. You can't miss it.
You cannot miss it.
But yes, it's right next to the Cork Arts District, which was intentional. It's really special to be connected to a community of 70 creators, artists, and actors and writers. But it's also right next to the Lackawanna neighborhood, a neighborhood that represents a very different side of Jacksonville. And I was very intentional about locating there, hoping to see that we could build some bridges in a little space like Yellow House.
It really does suit you in so many ways. And this exhibit, I think this latest exhibit is one example of that. But you have a lot of other ideas coming down the pike too, I'm sure.
We do. We've got some upcoming exhibitions that are going to be really powerful. We have an exhibit coming up that's also youth-based. We're also in the summer going to be highlighting one of our very brilliant local artists, Erin Kendrick, a Black woman artist who is also focusing on themes of Black women in contemporary culture. We're going to be doing something very special leading up to the elections around women and getting out the vote. We're doing partnerships with places like the Five and Dime Theater, the Holocaust Memorial Gallery, Mayo Clinic, MD Anderson. So we're not just programming what's happening in our sweet little yellow house on King Street, but really it's about what we're doing out in the community as much.
Very nice. Well, you can go to yellowhouseart.org, yellowhouseart.org for more about Yellow House and come see their new exhibit, Voices Unearthed. It is running through middle of May. Or just stop by any time and check out the Cork District as well. Hope McMath, the head of Yellow House, always good to see you and thanks for being here.
Thank you very much, Melissa.
A quick break. In a moment, she really is fierce. WJXT Channel 4 morning anchor Melanie Lawson steps into the studio. It's a preview of her fierce talk in 5 points next Wednesday night. We're going to tell you about that right after this.
Hospice and palliative care. Since 1979, the Compassionate Guide for more than 200,000 patients facing advanced illness in Northeast Florida. Today, serving 16 counties, including yours. Available 24/7 to help you and your loved one. More at choosecommunityhospice.com.
On the next Fresh Air, Brian Tyree Henry, who co-stars in the FX series Atlanta as Alfred Miles, who goes by his rap name Paperboy. Henry is also starring on Broadway in the show Lobby Hero. He was nominated for an Emmy for his guest appearance on This Is Us, in which he sang very soulfully. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Getting to the root of American Islamophobia.
The definition of Islamophobia to one basic tenet would be that any manifestation of Muslim identity is tied to the presumption of terrorism.
One author says fear and hatred of Muslims isn't just traditional bigotry, it's enshrined in law. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
We love the Friday News Roundup, but keeping up with the headlines can feel like a decathlon. So far this week, James Comey calls out the man who fired him, the president contradicts his UN ambassador over new Russia sanctions, and a courtroom drama turns into a circus. So let's try something different. The Midweek News Roundup. Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hi, I'm Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues is now on twice a week. Blues Horizon, Monday and Wednesday nights at 11, right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, she wakes up thousands of viewers each morning as the talented AM anchor on WJXT4, the local station. Our news partner here at WJCT, News for Jax. Melanie Lawson is also a wife, a mom, and a fierce female leader here in Jacksonville. She is the featured speaker next week at the She is Fierce live spring event in Five Points. We have a preview right now. Melanie Lawson steps into Studio 5 doing a little radio instead of TV this morning. Hey, Melanie.
Hey, it's exciting to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you here. You know, I watch you every morning as I'm getting ready to do my show.
At 4:30 in the morning.
That's right. That's why you're so fierce, because you get up at the crack of dawn to anchor the news, which yes. is not easy.
No, it's not. I always say I'm a morning person, but no one is a 3 o'clock in the morning person. So that's when the first alarm goes off. The second goes off at 3:07, and then I usually climb out of bed at 3:14. So I live by those minutes.
If it's past 3:14, you might be late.
I'm in trouble. Yeah, yeah.
You go on the air, what, every morning at 5?
At Monday through Friday at 4:28.
Okay.
We are on air, and we have a super long morning show, which is exciting because we get to, you know, meet a lot of really cool people and tell really great stories in our community. But we're on from 4:30 till 10. And been in Jacksonville now for 12 years, which if you had asked me that 12 years ago, I would have never thought that
never
would be the case.
Never thought that, but no. Here you are, and you have such a devoted following. And of course, your husband, Tariq Miner, is also an anchor and reporter at the station.
Yeah, which is crazy.
And so you're going to be talking about all of this next Wednesday night, April 25th, at the second floor in Five Points. It's one floor below the Hoptinger Rooftop Bar. At the She is Fierce Spring event, I'm privileged to be the chapter leader of this great group for empowering and connecting women. And we're so excited to have you as our speaker this spring, because people look at someone like you and think, wow, she really has it so easy. She really has it all. But nothing is ever as simple and perfect as it looks.
No doubt about it. And I think, you know, that's who I am, is I try to be honest and transparent and real, people often say. You know, I think we scroll through people's Facebook pages and we all envy the wonderful lives that we're all living.
Yes.
And then, you know, you put me on TV, a husband on TV, and, you know, we look like we have it all together, but our life is crazy. And it starts crazy, it ends crazy, the weekends are crazy. And, you know, and to get to the point where I am in life and the things that I've accomplished and still want to accomplish, it's been a long road. And I think I have certain gifts that are naturally given to me, and I just naturally have them, and I've really tried to sharpen them. But then I also look at my life and the people who have come into my life and walked through my life, who I've had brief conversations with that have had major impacts on my life. And, you know, I look at it all as gifts. So that's kind of where I want to talk about, you know, next week, you know, these gifts that we all have, how to identify them, how to use them, how to strengthen them, and, you know, try to talk about some of the challenges that I've had and things that I've had to overcome. Like, I mean, you would never know, but I'm actually like a little introverted at times and a little shy.
I never would have guessed that.
And I don't like, you know, being in environments necessarily having to network, because I am very natural. So when I'm like, oh, I have to act this certain kind of way, or I have to, you know, say this, that's not always easy for me.
Interesting. Now, you mentioned too, you and your husband have kids, you're juggling kids, opposite work schedules, all the challenges parents face as we try to put together our careers and our family lives. And I think particularly for younger women who come out to hear you speak next week, it will be really impactful, because you are a role model for a lot of young women. And it's going to be a really nice experience and a powerful experience for them to meet you and hear your story.
You know, you think of yourself, oh, really? Am I a role model? And I hope I am. You know, I hope I live a life and I walk this earth to make a difference and to have an impact. So, what's funny is out in the community, parents may not know me. Like, they're like, I think she works at Walmart. You know, I don't know. Maybe she's our mail carrier. I don't know. But the kids, you know, they come up and they're like, no, no, that's Melanie Lawson on Channel 4. She wakes me up in the morning. And they're like, that's not her. You know, so I am realizing that, you know, young people, they watch the news. And, you know, I do a lot of public speaking. And every chance I get, you know, I do try to have a conversation with someone young to say, you know, hey, how are you? I know it's so hard. And, you know, I talked to someone at the Generation W event last Friday, and I said something to her, and I said, oh, I bet you said that to everybody. She's like, no, I've never had that wisdom before, you know, of what I said to her. And because I wanted her to like live her life and be great, but enjoy it too, and really just feel it and let it kind of wash over her, because she was just so talented, and she spoke on stage and obviously very mature and has taken on a lot. And we all do, but, you know, there's joy and there are moments of gratitude that we all have to look at.
Yes. And we'll close with a note of gratitude. Thank you so much, Melanie Lawson. It's so good to see you. And I'm so pleased to bring this to the public. Get your tickets now at 904tix.com, 904tix.com, and just search She Is Fierce, Melanie Lawson. She'll be speaking next Wednesday night, April 25th. In Five Points at the Second Floor. And I will see you there, lady.
Yes ma'am. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. A quick 1A's up next, but first, here's how you can support WJCT.
Pick up your phone and give us a quick call at 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528, or go online at wjct.org. Hi there, Kevin Murray, our producer of First Coast Connect. If you enjoyed that program, you know, there's nowhere else you can get it than here. We get you the news of the day. I mean, we had a big thing, that big story about going on at JEA, and the interim CEO made sure that you had your opinions heard. And that's because of you. Making your phone calls to this station is what gets us a program like this on the air every day. So make the call now. Thank you so much. Once again, 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, online, wjct.org.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.